Steady in the boat. Steady in the boat.
I'm absurd.
Stop piggybacking what you said!
Good students and damn fine journalists. That's what we are here at Alligator Sports.
Hello and welcome to the Alligator Sports Podcast. This is the show for Wednesday, March 31st, 2010. I'm your host, Adam Berry. Joining me today, Mike McCall, one of our football writers.
Once again, I've dressed for warm for cold weather when it's nice and hot outside. My house was unseasonably cold again this morning, but I'll take it if I can avoid saying anything horribly ignorant about track and field or swimming today on the podcast.
That's great, because joining us is a very special guest, the second coach we've had on this podcast, track and field head coach Mike Holloway. Say hi, Coach.
Good morning.
All right, so we're going to talk, obviously, about the NCAA Indoor Championships with the men's team just won a couple weeks ago, and then we're going to talk sort of about the transition to the outdoor season. The Florida Relay is coming up this weekend.
Sounds good.
Have you sort of come down from the NCAA Championship? What was that like coming after that?
I don't know if it's come down is the right word. I mean, it's just because of all the busyness that goes with Florida Relays going on this weekend, I've kind of been consumed by that. But Right. Just when I think, okay, it's over, we're good, we'll move on to outdoors, and I'll get a phone call from somebody that hasn't talked to yet, and we relive the whole situation. And, you know, so it's been an emotional roller coaster, but it's been great.
Have you sort of soaked it all in yet, sort of appreciated it, or does that come after the outdoor?
I appreciated it right away. I mean, it's been a long time. You know, we've been second. Before this year, you know, there'd been, over the last 6 years, there'd been 12 championships, indoors and outdoors combined. We'd been second in six of those meets, so you know, we'd been very close. And so immediately it was very appreciated, but I think when I finally got home and sat down with my wife and we talked about it and, you know, having my son, he gave me a little card, you know, Daddy, congratulations, that was pretty cool. And that's when it really sank in. It really did.
You mentioned everybody's been trying to get you to relive the meet and how it went. Can we get you to do that one more time?
Oh, sure. Well, I think the biggest thing was is that from the moment we got off the plane, the moment we got to the facility, even on Wednesday, there was a different focus, there was a different determination about the team. And starting on Friday with the events, everybody was strictly business, and everything went really well. And Coach Lemke, our throws coach, and I talked on Friday night, and I told him, I said, we're going to win this championship between 6:55 and 7:30 tomorrow night. And he says, what do you mean? Well, the men's 400 started at 6:55, and then at 7:15 was the men's 60, and then 7:30 the triple jump was going to be over. And so the goal was in that 35-minute span to put up 30 to 35 points, and we put up 32, and essentially the meet was over because nobody could catch us.
Let's talk about some of those individual champions. One in the 60 meter, you mentioned Jeff Demps. Can you talk about him and how he's progressed?
Well, Jeff's doing well. I mean, the biggest thing, Jeff's a phenomenal athlete, but I don't think people understand Jeff is one of the hardest working people I've ever been around in my life. You know, he comes to practice every day. Everything he does is with the intensity and a passion about him. And, you know, his goal, he told me when he walked in the building on Saturday, he's like, Coach, I got this. We're going to win this thing. You know, so love Jeff Demps. Glad he's a part of our program.
Could you talk about what it's like sharing him with the football program, how that all started, and how it works out through the season? I think he's the first athlete in Florida history to win a national championship in two sports now.
Okay.
Can you talk about what it's like sharing him with Urban Meyer, how that kind of partnership's worked out?
Well, I mean, the big thing is you know, when he was being recruited, you know, he was promised he could do both sports. And we Urban and I have worked together. But the big thing is right now is during this time of year, he's not with football, he's with us, but he continues to lift with Mickey Marotti and the strength and conditioning staff. And Mickey's done a great job of, you know, tapering him, you know, for us for the major meets and stuff. So it hasn't been a big of a problem at all. The big thing is that Jeff is just such a focused young man and individual that he can handle the workload from both programs.
You mentioned that confidence coming and saying, I got this, Coach. Is that normal for him? Is that normal for most of your runners to come up with that kind of confidence?
Well, when they're confident in their ability to get something done, you know, I've noticed that a lot. You know, back even when at Caron Clement and, you know, Bernard Williams, John Capel, those kind of guys, Ricky Harris, when they knew they were ready, you know, you could hear it in their voice, you could see it in the way they walked. And there was no different with Jeff. Jeff, and if you listen to his interviews afterwards, people ask him if he's disappointed in his time. He's like, the time didn't matter. I was just trying to put up 10 points for my teammates. So,
Let's talk about some of the other individual champions. You mentioned the triple jump, Christian Taylor. Can you talk about the progress he made and how much he's been helped by bringing in the assistant coach, Dick Booth, the jumps coach?
Well, you know, to begin with, Coach Booth is one of the best, if not, well, in my opinion, he's the best jumps coach in the country and one of the best in the world. And his record proves it. You know, he's got, you know, a gazillion national champions and record holders. So, and having him be able to work with Christian was just a godsend. It was a true blessing in the way all that unfolded. And we knew when we recruited Christian, he was a special athlete, and we knew that, you know, he has aspirations and goals of being the world record holder, the, you know, Olympic champion and stuff like that. And so being able to get somebody of that caliber athletically and a coach with the same talent level to put them together has been phenomenal.
How were you able to get Coach Booth? He came here from Arkansas, right? And Arkansas is one of the big track powerhouses. How were you able to get Coach Booth here?
Well, honestly, he called me. You know, there was a situation in Arkansas where he wasn't going to be there anymore, and he just happened to get a phone call, like, right after he was let go at Arkansas. Well, and through the conversation, I don't know if you realize it, there's a job opening in Florida, and they do have Christian Taylor, you know? And so Coach Booth called me, and we've been friends, you know, through our battles in the SEC, and I thought he was calling me to see if maybe Christian, you know, what was going on with Christian, and he was like, no, I'm looking for a job. And I was like, whoa, you know? And so we made that happen. That was a no-brainer.
How important has Coach Booth then been to Christian's development?
Well, I mean, he's been phenomenal because Christian, when you have an athlete of Christian's caliber, it's very important that they trust the person that they're working with, and Christian really trusts Coach Booth, and Coach Booth understands Christian's talent because, you know, Christian's only had one of himself, but Coach Booth has had, you know, 10 or 12 of Christian, so he understands how to get that done.
And how much did Coach Booth have to do with Omar Craddock, also finished top 10 at Nationals, and he's only been here since, I think, January, right. Sean said. Mm-hmm. Sean, by the way, set up this interview. Thank you, Sean. He's observing from the corner. Yeah. How much did he have to do with Omar Craddock?
Well, I mean, definitely a lot of it. You know, Omar was a guy that, was aware of Coach Booth when Coach Booth was in Arkansas. And when he came here, Omar realized he wasn't going to get in school until January, so he decided he wanted to come here also. We were fortunate enough. We had a scholarship available. And, you know, it's not rare. It's not something that happens all the time that a guy walks in the door in January and, you know, a month and a half, two months later that he's now an NCAA champion as a team, and also he's a scorer. You know, he was seventh in the triple jump, so he improved by about a foot and a half. So very, very pleased with that situation.
I did have one more question to ask you about Jeff Demps. You mentioned he's still training with Coach Baratti.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any kind of – I mean, they probably want him to bulk up more than you want him to bulk up, right? Is there any talk about that, about the kind of weightlifting plan he's on, or does Jeff just understand where he needs to be?
I mean, I think the big thing is we have to understand football plays the bills. I mean, and that's why he came here, to be a great football player as well as a great track athlete. But in terms of if Jeff's going to be a running back, he's got to be bigger, and he understands that. And he's, you know, Coach Moratti's done a good job of helping us, you know, not getting too big, you know, so he's still, you know, obviously he's a national champion, so we're doing something right. But, you know, I don't talk to him. That's their business. You know, whatever weight he is, that's the way I got to coach him at.
All right, another one of your individual national champions, women's shot put, Mariam Kepskavili. I may have just butchered that name. For that, I apologize.
We all do it.
Can you just talk about her? She's got to be one of the most consistent, dominant athletes at this school just what she's done the last couple of years.
I think what you have to understand about Mariam, first of all, she's not just a world-class athlete. She's a world-class person. And she and Coach Lemke have just an unbelievable relationship, and they get along so well. So they sit down, and they put forth a plan, and then they stick to it, and they follow it. And when Mariam walks into the building, she knows she's ready, and it's just phenomenal to watch. I mean, you watch her do standing throws to go further than most of the girls, you know, regular throws do. So,
do you ever just think when she walks up, well, there's a national champion, you know, there's a first place finish?
I have to wait till the shot put lands, you know, and make sure it's not a foul. But we very seldom. I mean, we haven't. It's been 2 years since we've gone into competition thinking Mariam wasn't going to win. So. Yeah.
All right, then the last one of the four, Charlotte Browning, women's mile. I was able to see her sort of developing cross country. Did you expect this kind of success out of her in the mile run?
Well, yes. Right after the NCAA cross country move, I think she was like in the top 20.
Something like that, yeah.
The top 25 for sure. Coach Morgan looked at me and said she's going to win the mile indoors because we knew she had the kind of capability she's had in the mile, but when she bought into cross country and got strong in that area, then now she had the endurance to go along with her natural foot speed.
Can you talk about Coach Morgan? Because he was obviously pretty critical in the success of your women's distance runners. Can you talk about what he's added to the staff?
Well, I think the big thing is there's a passion there on his part. You know, he's hungry. You know, he's one of the younger guys on the staff, but he really wants to be good. I mean, the thing about the staff as a whole is they've all bought into my philosophy. I think we were kind of dysfunctional here in the past where everybody kind of had their own thought process and own ideas. And so when they combined the program, the first thing I felt like I had to do was make sure I had people on this staff that trust and believe in me and what I want to do. And that's what I have in Coach Morgan and the rest of my staff. Everybody here understands what my plan is, understands, you know, what we want to do, and they trust and believe in it. And that's why we're being successful right now.
And how does your plan change now, having won a national championship, or does it change? Does that change the direction of the program a little bit? What will change because of you winning a national championship?
We'll work harder. You know, we have to remember where I work and who I work for. You know, the other thing is, you know, I'm a Gator. I graduated from this institution, so this is not just a job for me. This is it's an incredible passion for me because how many people can say that they get a chance to coach at their alma mater and help their alma mater be successful? So when I'm out there recruiting, when I'm out there, you know, working every day, this is more than just a paycheck for me. So us being national champions, just all this now has just shown us that we can do it. So we want to be national champions every year. Now, is that realistic? It may not be, but that's going to be our goal every year, is to be national champions.
And two personal accolades for you. You named the National Head Coach of the Year and also the first African-American coach to lead a team to an indoor title. Can you talk about what that means to you? Is that something you had set out to accomplish, or is it just something that, you know, it happened and it's nice, but you weren't focused too much on it?
Well, I think, you know, being the first African-American obviously is something that's very prestigious. And honestly, I had figured it out about a year and a half ago or so, maybe a little longer, and I'd mentioned it to my wife. And it was funny because, you know, when you win a national title, you get to go to the White House. So when President Obama was elected, the first thing my wife says, well, you need to be the first African-American to win a national title so you can go meet the first African-American president. So that was my – I had a driving force behind this also. My wife, she's pretty tough sometimes.
That's pretty cool. When will that be when you guys go to the White House? Do you know yet?
I'm not sure. I know it'll be sometime this spring. I'm looking forward to it, though. Very excited about that. And, you know, I think the big thing for me is, like, my mom talked to me about it, and, you know, she can do – sometimes she kind of puts it in perspective. She says, you have to understand something. You're the first to ever do that, and that can never change. Mm-hmm. And I never thought about it like that. And there's been so many that have gone before me that have tried, and, you know, even myself came close before. So I think the big thing for me is that, you know, I'm going to embrace that, but it's not going to change who I am. You know, yeah, I'm the first African-American, but I don't want to be the last, and I don't want this to be my last time either. So.
Have you thought about what you're going to say when you meet the president? Is that cross
no,
your mind?
No, I don't want to rehearse it because I know if I rehearse it, I'm going to mess it up anyway. I just want to make sure I say, you know, hello, Mr. President. I don't want to call him, you know, Obama or something. Right. Like, that. Like, you know, like we're hanging out, you know, right, playing basketball, we're boys or something. You know?
All right, let's shift gears a little bit. This time we're going to talk with Coach Choi about the international recruits you have on your team. Sort of a different thing from a lot of major sports here on mm-hmm. campus. How do you go about recruiting those kind of athletes, and how is that different from recruiting American athletes?
Well, I think the biggest thing is whether it's American or international, there's just the internet. It's, you know, it's the World Wide Web is just amazing. So we have access to results. And again, that's where my staff comes into play, because Coach Lemke, Coach Morgan, Coach O'Neill, Coach Welty, you know, they all have great international ties and right. people that they know. So when there's a great athlete somewhere in another part of the country, we're aware of it. And, you know, because we work at Florida, we have the budget, we can get on a plane, we can go check them out. And, you know, so our kind of our motto is, if there's an athlete on this planet that's eligible, you know, and can help this program, help us win the national titles, we got to go get them. Because if we don't, somebody else will.
That's interesting. Yeah, one of the questions I was going to ask you about recruiting is, you know, basketball and football and even baseball now, there's all these websites documenting all of these recruits and mm-hmm. constantly analyzing them, putting up highlight videos. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying they use those like solely, but it certainly makes their job easier. And I was
Definitely
wondering
does.
What it's like for you guys not having that those extensive of resources. You just have to have a staff kind of pouring through results.
Right. Well, I think the big thing with recruiting is you have to have connections. I mean, even here in the States, it's good to have, you know, like I've got friends in Ohio or friends in California or friends in Georgia or Maryland who call that, hey, I saw this kid today, you got to check him out. Now, sometimes those aren't always good leads, but a lot of times they are. You know, we signed a young man from Ohio that, you know, he called me 2 years ago because he ran into a good friend of mine, the guy that I coached here in Gainesville, and he ended up being coached by the club. So he picked the phone and called my office and go, I hear you're a pretty good coach. I'd like to get them to know you. And he's going to be a Gator now. So,
yeah. Any other questions about this before we move on to the outdoor stuff? Let's talk about the transition from the indoor season to the outdoor season, which are about to start this weekend at the Florida Relays. How do you sort of, you know, shift gears back down from the, you know, you just won an NCAA championship. How do you right. convince the guys, like, start of a new season?
Well, you know, the guys understand. And so do the ladies that, you know, just, you know, hey, indoors over, it's time to move on outdoors. You know, it's just something that's part of what we do. Mm-hmm. Like the guys will tell you, we get back here late, well, early Sunday morning, Sunday afternoon, I send them a text message, you know, congratulations, you're the indoor national champions. Welcome to the outdoor seasons. See you in the weight room tomorrow morning. You know, mm-hmm. so it's back to business. We got to get back to training. We got to get back to focus. And I've been very proud of everybody because nobody is trying to live off what we did indoors. They understand it's a totally different season outdoors. And, you know, we've been close outdoors also, so we want to make sure we get that done.
Is there a difference in prestige between outdoor and indoor? Is one more important than the other to you guys as far as winning a national championship?
I don't think so. Not for me anyway. I mean, a national title is a national title to me. And, but I think that it, probably in the track and field community, the outdoor title is a little bit more prestigious. There's a little more more events involved, more people involved, and a little more hype around it. So is that something that we really want to do this year? Definitely. You know, it's something that's important to the group. You know, we lost last year by 2 points. And trust me, the staff and I, we've gone back and found about 30 points we could have scored. So, you know, but the big thing for us is we can't lose focus on what our major goal is. And our goal is always to be at our absolute best at the championship events.
You know? What really changes from indoor to outdoor? Can you tell us what's going to change in the meet?
Well, the first thing is, you know, the outdoor tracks are 400 meters versus the 200 meter tracks indoors. You run the 60, not, you know, 60 indoors, 100 outdoors. You run the 110 hurdles, not the 60 hurdles. You add the javelin, you add the 4x1, you know, you get the wind. It can be a factor for you, stuff like that, the sun, the rain. Indoors, you're in a building, and it's climate controlled. So I think the big thing about us is, like, we pick up events like the 4x1, the 400 hurdles, the 100, which we're better at than we are at the 60. We pick up the javelin, you know, events that we're better at outdoors than we are indoors. So, well, I personally think we're a better outdoor team than we are an indoor team.
That's what I was just about to ask you, if you thought it played more to your strengths being outside.
Yeah, it definitely does. Definitely does.
So it's safe to say the expectations for this team going into the outdoor season, national championship.
Yeah, that's always our goal. I mean, I don't think that, I mean, being at a place like the University of Florida, if you get up every morning and you're wanting to be fourth or fifth in the country, that doesn't fly around here. I mean, you know, again, we've been close a lot, but we've been close a lot because we've been trying to win.
Right.
We haven't been close because we've been trying to be second. You know, we didn't go to meet, so let's try to get fourth. I mean, I've heard stories about coaches that get up in meetings and go, well, we can't win this meet, so let's go get second. Never hear that come out of my mouth. You know, we get on the plane, we get there safely, we're trying to win the meet.
All right, let's talk about the Florida Relays coming up this weekend. Obviously, long-running event here in Florida. I believe I've heard last year, I think you were very excited about this meet. You have a lot of connections to this meet. Can you just talk about what you're expecting?
Well, I mean, I'm just expecting, you know, I want to see some passion. I want to see some people go out there, put the uniform on, and put some pride behind it. I think the big thing is, you know, we're at home. You got your fans. You got your girlfriends, your boyfriends, your aunts, your uncles, and, you know, and your cousins. Everybody going to show up to watch us compete. But, you know, being able to compete here and on this facility, you know, it's just an amazing thing. And we got, you know, this meet's been as about as big as it's been in a long, long time. So we're really excited about that. But I think the big thing is that we remember that this is our meet, and we want to make sure we put on a good show for our home fans.
All right. Well, thanks, Coach. We really appreciate it. It's the Florida Relays this weekend. If you're in Gainesville listening to this, you can head out to the Percy Beard Track Stadium, I believe, and check out Coach Mike Holloway and the Gators there.
Percy Beard Track and James Presley Stadium.
That's right. Thanks. See, I made a fool of myself. It turned out. The wrong track. All right. Thanks, Coach.
All right, you're welcome.
All right, joining us now, the UF swimming coach, Greg Troy. Greg, thanks for being here with us.
Glad to be here.
Another national championship winning coach here at UF, fresh off the women's national championship. Can you just talk about that experience and what everything was like up there in Indiana?
Well, it was a great weekend, obviously. Anytime we get up in a national theater like that and you can get the job done, it's a good thing. Women performed well across the board, been knocking on the door for a few years, and we just finally had a great meet at the right time.
It was a little bit of a roller coaster experience right there. I believe the last day you weren't, you know, you were a couple points behind, maybe, what was it, in fourth place in the last day before the two diving events?
Yeah, I think we started out, we led after the first event, and I'm not sure we led it again until after the last individual event going into the last relay. So it was up and down. We kind of hung in somewhere third to fifth the entire meet. But we knew we were pretty good with the last day being our best day, and it just worked out that way. It makes it a little special when it happens the last day that way.
Right. What was your sort of emotion level at, you know, going into that last day?
We knew we still had a pretty good chance the evening before, and we talked about just coming in and taking care of business and winning heats in the prelims. And after the morning prelims where we swam so well, it really made things pretty nervous. So everyone's a little on edge. We had a couple girls that broke down a little bit in tears just because they were a little nervous coming in the evening, but they did a great job. They're really good young ladies at night.
Who in particular, and how did they do later on?
A couple of the freshmen we're going to have to swim that relay in the evening. Jamie Bohanicki, Sarah Bateman, the sophomore, they were both a little nervous coming in because they knew it was a big ball to carry.
And also, I mean, you know, the divers obviously being near the end, they were kind of what put you guys ahead. How much pressure was on them, and how cool do they have to be to not have that get to them?
Especially for someone that, if you haven't been to a lot of swim meets, the last day, the last diving event's a platform. So you're 10 meters up, and it's like hitting concrete if you hit it wrong. So you put the nerves on top of that type of stress and the team environment, it's amazing as well those two girls did. They had to be good in the prelims to make the finals, which they were, and then Kara Simone was tremendous at night stepping up a notch. Coach Crane did a fantastic job getting those girls ready.
Do you know what he said to them before they performed, or did they say to him, how did they keep each other confident?
We work pretty well. Coach Crane and I have been together a while now, and they actually, the girls had a very poor first day and got better through the meet. So I think the whole focus was, hey, ladies, we're right on track. We've gotten better each day. This is going to be a really great day. Just go out and relax and enjoy it. Our focus with the entire team, both the divers and the swimmers the last day, is all year long we talked about getting an opportunity. And when you get a chance to take an opportunity, you got to enjoy it. You can't be stressed out and worried about it. And I think they followed through very well in that area.
What does the national title sort of mean to you and to the program? Obviously, Florida's a very successful program, but the first one since 1982.
It's tremendous because we've been knocking on the door. We compete in a really tough conference, so it's double hard in swimming for us because the conference meet does mean so much, and you got to come back 3 weeks later and do it again. It's going to make a tremendous boost from a recruiting standpoint because, you know, we've kind of been the kid that was there close and never could get the job done. Been that way since 82. Sometimes a couple times in the 90s, we maybe had some of the best athletes early 90s, late 80s, and fell a little bit short. I think it's going to – the air of confidence. A lot of the success that came this year was a direct result of the women winning the conference meet last year. All of a sudden it becomes a reality. Once you think you can win, you're a whole lot better off than if you're wondering if you can. And that type of thing brought some new people to new levels.
So what do you sort of attribute like this performance to? Their maturity, their confidence?
Combination of confidence and maturity. Those are both real good. When you've got senior leadership, someone like Gemma Spofforth, Stephanie Napier, who's been a four-year NC2A person, even though she hasn't scored every year, she's been a scorer on the relays every year. You take those type of people and you combine it with some youth that's very enthusiastic and has some experience, you start to have great things happen. We're seeing a lot of what we saw from Gemma Spofforth her last 2 years, we're starting to see in a younger age. We're seeing some freshmen like Jamie Bohanek, a local girl, step up real well. Shara Stafford was outstanding in that sophomore class, and Teresa Crippen swims the last day. Two big-time repeat swims back-to-back to put us in position where we're really outstanding.
You talked about, you know, how this is hopefully like a launching pad for the program now, but you do lose Gemma Spofforth and you lose Kara Salamone, your diver. Are you worried about losing them? Do you have people, you know, behind them that you're confident in that are going to step in already?
Well, the young ladies that you just talked about, Stafford and Crippen, are showing really big-time potential. Sarah Bateman has the ability to be in the relays, the same thing that Gemma was. So we're already looking at pieces. We had 12 women at the meet and only three graduate. So we've got nine returning that have experience at that level. We've got a good freshman class coming in and a good group of girls that just barely miss getting the meet. So we feel pretty good about the future, that we're on track to be every bit as good and certainly continue to be right there in the mix every time.
Could you talk about Gemma's career here? She's obviously one of the more decorated swimmers that you've had. You know, how much has she meant to the program? And then also as a person, I know she does a lot of charity work in the community. I know a lot of the athletes do, but I think she works on the Alachua County Crisis Hotline, answering phone calls and everything. For someone who came from another country and is an Olympian and has all these things going on and still take the time out to do something like that, it's pretty impressive to me.
Well, she's definitely a special person, not just a special athlete. When she came in here, had a lot of personal traumas, death of her mother during her sophomore year. She came in, she'd been had an illness, was kind of out of the sport. So she came in, Gainesville became home, extremely well-liked by the rest of the team members, respected as well as liked, and improved every year. When she won the individual title her sophomore year, I think that those type of things start to build that other people realize that it's possible for them. And when you get that type of dynamic, it's a growth thing for everyone in the team as well as it was for her. She goes out and works in the community. She's a very giving person, interested in other team members, almost a mother to some of the younger girls in the team. You know, when they have problems, they seek her out because she's dealt with so many. And she's very interested in doing those things. Her work in the crisis hotline, they've moved her up. She missed a few practices. Just a class individual the whole way around.
How close were you with Gemma, and how close were you, you know, just helping her get through that sort of time in her life in her sophomore year?
I believe her sophomore year would actually, oddly enough, it was the same place the men were at Ohio State. The last evening of the meet, she had a complete breakdown. Still thoughts of her mother and things in the deck. But she won the 200 backstroke that year. We didn't even make warm-up part of it. She and I spent some time sitting in the back talking about some things, getting her calmed down and ready to go. And she takes those things as experiences, and it just made her stronger the whole way along. A lot of pressure for her this year. She took the team on her own shoulders after they won the SEC meet last year, and one of the things was that they wanted to repeat as the SEC title. We felt depth-wise that was going to be pretty hard to do because Georgia is such a strong, deep team. And we had we always focus on the NCAA, but even this year a little bit more. So she took everyone on her shoulders, got ready for the meet, and took it personally when she didn't swim quite as well in the 200 backstroke as what she wanted to. It's the pressure of the team. Winning the NCAA's SEC 4 years in a row is an unbelievable accomplishment in itself because we have most of the best teams, a lot of the best teams in the country in our conference. And then come back and be a three-year winner in the 200 backstroke and come back and just miss in the fourth year. Big disappointment. Turned right around, and I think she was the second fastest relay split in the meet in freestyle, which is not her specialty.
Can you talk about the expectations? Obviously, a school like Florida, you know, it's sort of national championship or bust for a lot of programs. How do you deal with that? How do you manage that coming into the start of a season, and especially going down the stretch?
I guess the downside of winning it is now that you know you can do it, so there's really an expectation. When we recruit people, we're recruiting from the standpoint, if you're going to come to Florida, you're going to be competing every year to win the national championship. It's a goal. It's expected at some point over 4 years you're going to do it. And I think that's why it's so special when you do. We're not going to approach the season any differently any other time. We put our emphasis on taking advantage of opportunities when they arise and special performances. And if we get enough special performances by individuals, then we're going to be a player in the big time.
So a lot of the things you're saying sound pretty similar to what Coach Holloway was saying a minute ago. You know, there's the expectation of winning a national championship. You got kind of the monkey off your back this year, both of you. How much do you and the other coaches talk about this? Because you're all in pretty similar situations. Just about every program here this year is in a position to compete for a national championship.
The coaches, we see a lot of one another. There's a lot of exchange going back and forth. And certainly we're all in our own little worlds, and there's things that make our sports individually different. But I think one of the biggest advantages is you're always with class people, class athletes. So good athletes in swimming are always with good athletes in the weight room. They're with good athletes in track, softball. We lift sometimes. We're crossing over with the football team. So you're always in an environment where that type of expectation is there. The coaches themselves exchange ideas. I'm real familiar with Mouse does. I had a son that ran with Mouse for 4 years. So we're in a dynamic where if you want a different opinion of how they handle things, it's really easy to pick up the phone and talk to someone. So that's a good exchange.
Can you think of a case where you've done that, either giving the advice or taking the advice specifically?
I talk with him a little bit. Rest is a key thing. You know, talking a little bit of middle of the season, where he's at with guys. And he talks about taking their legs away and how tired they are, and he's going to give them back. Real similar to what we do in swimming. He's had his guys over to swim sometimes. It's a good cross training. So we do some cross training and exchange of ideas.
It's interesting. Let's talk about some of the performances from the women at the national championship meet. Five UF records set, two national titles. Can you talk about the 200-yard free relay teams, Stafford, Spofforth, Napier, and Bateman?
Well, you know, they always say you can't win the NCAAs without sprinters. And I don't know that that's actually the true situation, but it certainly helps when it's the first man of the meet to come out and be ahead. We're never favored in that event. We had two real sprinters, and then you add to Stephanie Napier and Sarah Bateman, who are true sprinters, and that's their focal point. You add to them just two good athletes that swim a bunch of different things in Stafford and Spofforth, and all of a sudden we come out the first day and we win the event. I think that gave an expectation to all the ladies that, hey, this is a possible deal. And again, you're back to when you believe it, there's a whole lot better chance.
Was that kind of a table setter? Then that happens, and then the team sort of started believing, or did they have that confidence coming into the whole thing?
I think they had that confidence coming in, and that's why it happened. Sometimes the reality of happening takes that confidence to a completely new level. Matter of fact, as we went through the meet, to their credit, I got into a situation that we expected to win everything, and it's just not going to happen in that dynamic, but that's what we want. We want that kind of expectation, and we had a couple situations where people swam extremely well and didn't win, and they were upset with themselves from that standpoint. Those are good things when you get that type of athlete. I do think there's definitely pressure here at Florida. I think sometimes that's why once in a while, you know, you'll see some athletes that transfer from here. It happens in a lot of the sports.
Right.
And I think it is they get in this environment, and if you aren't committed to being the very best, it's a real hard place to be.
And one other thing we asked Coach Holloway about, international recruiting. You got a lot of international athletes on the swim team, Spofforth being from England. I think 9 of your 12 men swimmers at NCAAs were foreign-born. Can you talk about the process of recruiting? I mean, football and basketball, they have, like, all these websites just documenting all these recruits and analyzing them and have highlight film. and you don't have that for swimming. So how do you find these athletes?
I think Coach Holloway and I are in a similar situation. We both have a lot of international experience. You've traveled with U.S. teams during the summer, and you see a lot of those athletes. Our entire staff is that way. Martin Wilby, Anthony Nesty do a lot of traveling internationally, both are foreign themselves. So you combine that with success we had with foreign athletes, they're making a lot of contacts to us. We try not to bring anyone that we feel like can't be a real big player. But a lot of those foreign athletes are contacting us. They come with a wealth of experience. They really appreciate the opportunity they have, so they add a new dynamic. The men's squad's a little deceiving. Nine of them have a foreign connection, but I think of those nine, I think four or five are actually raised here in the States or went to school here in the States. So they're kind of Americans. It's just they get a little international flavor because they have an opportunity to represent another country because they have either dual citizenship or carry a different passport.
Men's champion, you want to talk about the
men's let's talk about the men's championship then. You guys finished fifth there. You had the National Swimmer of the Year in Connor Dwyer. Can you talk about him? And I think he scored the most points ever in Florida history for a swimmer.
Might be the case.
Or the most points in an NCAA meet for a Florida swimmer.
He was on part of four relays, did a fantastic job in winning two individual events, one's a 200 and 500. The thing that's amazing about Connor, he doesn't have a whole lot of experience. He's only been to one U.S. Nationals. This was his first NCAA meet. He'd swum 2 years in college and had done relatively well in the Big Ten, but hadn't excelled past that and just had some dramatic drops. I think to his credit, one of the reasons it happened, he spent a lot of time with Sean Frazier, who was last year's co-swimmer of the meet and swam exceptionally well. Sean won one event, was second, and two others. We probably had the two best athletes in the meet. A lot of coaches split their vote when they were voting for the athlete of the meet. I think the time he spent with Sean created a dynamic where he got a lot of experience at practice on a day-to-day basis, and those two guys went to the meet with a real feeling that they were going to 1-2 the events, and they actually did. We actually had another guy we were playing on 1-2-3 and fell a little bit short, but those are big-time swims, and Connor takes us to a whole new level.
Can you talk about the men's team at that? Obviously, you know, you had the swimmer of the year and then still finished fifth, very close to fourth, despite having sort of an undersized squad compared to what some of the other schools were bringing.
Yeah, we probably score more points per individual on both sides, men and women, than what the other schools did. I'm sure we did on the men's side, and I think we did on the women. Three of the four teams that beat us had 18 there. We only had 12. We're going to have to do a better job of getting some other guys to step up at that level. It requires that the guys have to go to the blocks a few more times. I think Connor had 13 or 14 swims. He swims a 500 freestyle and gets out, comes back a half an hour, 45 minutes later, and swims a breaststroke on our relay, which is almost an unheard-of double. We had that happen across the men and women's side. I think that's a direct result of having pretty committed people doing a great job training.
And just to clarify this, since I'm sure a lot of our listeners don't know the whole process of swimming qualification, but it's all about getting as many people qualified throughout the season to be able to swim the NCAA championships, correct? And that determines the size of your squad. And you guys had a smaller squad, but still finished with, I think, the most points in Florida history at a national championship, 364. And then Texas had 500. They won, and I'm assuming they had one of the larger squads. So it's really tests your depth, I guess, when you have 12 swimmers. You got all these guys having to swim a bunch of events. And what can you do to get more guys qualified for next year? Are there people on your team who didn't qualify who you really expected to?
We had one or two that we thought could make the meet. We've got to get some better performances from them. I think the men are a little in that dynamic where the women were maybe two, 3 years ago. We're close. We keep knocking on the door, but we just haven't jumped up over the top. We've had the swimmer of the year three or four times. We're going to have to get some of those younger guys to step up. We probably need to do a little bit better job recruiting-wise of getting some more talented guys in here. The problem in men's swimming is that you only have nine scholarships. Everyone has nine, but academically it's really tough to get into Florida at the moment. So we've got to get guys that are pretty sharp. It's getting more expensive to go to school all the time. So a lot of it depends on how good swimming is in your state. High school swimming in Florida was a little weak for a few years, so we're seeing that now, but now it's starting to get better. So those type of things are going to help us a bunch. I think just there was a little pressure on the men that when the women were successful, because we do a lot of our training together, it stepped them up. So I think the women's success is going to rub off the men a little bit, but we're going to be pretty young next year, so we're going to have to get some guys to continue to do what they're doing.
Could you talk about who you're looking to step up of your young swimmers? You're going to lose Sean Frazier to graduation, which obviously will be a big loss, but who are the people behind him who you're counting on?
Well, we feel like Brett has every bit the same tools, and he scored in a few events, just hasn't quite got the podium, but he's a finalist in two events, which is going to be big for us, swam a lot of relays. So we see him being a big-time athlete. Michael Joyce, another junior that's gotten better for 2 years. He unfortunately got sick with mono. We felt he was going to be a big player. Brian Howes, a sophomore. We've got two of the best freshmen in the country coming in. Connor Signorin from the Northeast and Eric Solis from Michigan. Those type of guys are going to make a big difference. And we only lose three of the 12 guys who are at the meet. So we have a good nucleus coming back with, and our diving corps is very young. I think our divers were good at the conference meet this year, and they're a year away from maybe stepping up and doing something at the national level next year.
You mentioned Brett Frazier. How similar is he to Sean? How are they similar or different?
From a look standpoint, you'd think they were twins. But Sean is very quiet, very reserved, very quiet determination, and Brett is a little more the island guy. They're both from the Caymans. Brett is a little more, you know, come see, come saw. He takes a good performance and builds off it, and the bad ones he doesn't worry about it. Sean will tend to dwell on it a little bit more. And part of that may be Sean actually went to school in the States for 2 years, right, and Brett didn't. And Sean was a much more accomplished athlete coming into school than Brett. Quite frankly, Brett was a guy that we took a little risk on because older brother was here and we felt like he could be good. And we probably should have redshirted him his freshman year. He probably would be really good if he had 2 years left.
Hmm. Let's talk about your coaching staff. I know you mentioned them earlier. You know, how important is it to get, you know, your guys on the same mindset, sort of with the same goal, especially with this large of a squad that you guys have to manage?
You know, we tend to carry a little bit larger squad than some of the other teams in the country just because we feel that there's some real gems out there that need to be worked with, and we like to coach. But you can't do it unless you have a great staff. Martin Wilby, probably one of the best coaches in the country. Anthony Nesty, both those two, they're associate head coaches. Martin on the women's side, Anthony and the men, even though they work with both. But both of those have turned down head coaching opportunities at other Division I schools. Like being in Gainesville, we feel like we have a good thing going. Leah Stancil is a graduate here, All-American, Olympian. So she understands what we're doing, a little bit younger, but adds a little different flavor. And Pete Knox focuses on the sprint events. So to have everything like that squared away, and then a guy like Donnie Crane that's been here as long, it gives us a pretty good, unique mixture. But you've got to have everyone on the same page or you're not going to be successful.
Hmm. All right, and with the season over, you want to explain to the listeners what you're up to now? What's the off season sort of like for you?
Well,
obviously, you don't really get time off, but what are you up to now?
Swimming is one of those. If you're going to be successful at the NCAA level, you have to have athletes that have international aspirations and want to make U.S. national teams. And they're just not going to be successful if they aren't training in the summer. We don't run organized team practices from the standpoint of the University of Florida, but most of them swim with the club team that's here in town. Gives us a lot of input in what they're doing. If they go home, they're training with their club. So we're trying to stay in really good physical shape, getting ready for the summer. And they kind of get week 10 days off, and then they're kind of back on it pretty good, trying to move forward.
And you personally, you go on to coach the – you help coach the national team, correct?
I'm the head coach for the U.S. National right. Pan Pac team this summer. About every other year, you get some opportunities to do things like that. Martin has worked with the British team. Anthony is actually going to go to the Commonwealth Games in October. We have several British and the Cayman guys are going to swim in the Commonwealth Games, which is really big for Commonwealth countries. And that opens some recruiting avenues, too, so it's all good things.
I was going to say, does it help to go off like that and you all sort of come back, reunite, new ideas, maybe new things, just...
I was just talking to Martin. He's in Britain right now. Gemma Spofford, Gemma Lowe, and Steph Proud, who finished up her eligibility last year but still here training and going to school. They're also in the British Nationals this weekend. Martin called with a couple ideas for a few British coaches he was talking today. So it gives us a good flavor and gives us a great chance to look for ways to keep improving.
And I'm sure that's good for recruiting, too, when you guys get out into these meets and you know, you can see other international athletes who you might want to get here.
Yeah, it definitely helps us out, and it encourages them to make contacts because we're interested in the athletes, whether they're American or international. We're getting out there and making sure they can be successful on whatever scale they want to be.
I have another question for you. I've heard swimmers talk before about fast pools versus slower pools. Doesn't make sense to me. Can you explain that?
There's a dynamic. It deals basically with physics. It's turbulence level.
That's why. Yeah, I was going to say that's why we don't get it. Yeah.
And it flows. Some have a better overflow on the deck of the pool. Lane ropes will break up the turbulence at the surface. And the deeper the water is, the less turbulence there is on the surface because there's more places for it to go. But some of it sometimes just feel. You know, what makes a fast pool is usually a fast swimmer. When they go fast, you know, then they all think the pool's fast. So, but from that standpoint, our facility is a little bit older, but when the conference meet was here, we broke all the conference records. And it's one that's got a bulkhead that's that gives you a real good turning surface. So some things like that play a part in it.
Do any schools have a pool that you feel is unfair or that plays too much to their advantages?
Not really, because you get a chance to go to those facilities. You know, a place like Ohio State, as nice as it was aesthetically, I think the biggest advantage in pools, some of the newer ones, the lanes are a little bit wider and the aesthetics are nicer. So I think the big advantage is recruiting. So they do create a dynamic there where more people want to be in that environment, and you get in that situation, then the pool becomes real fast.
All right, great. I think that's pretty much it. Coach, thanks. We really appreciate you coming on here. Best of luck to you as you move on to the next fall and spring.
Okay, thanks a lot, guys.
Appreciate it. Thanks, Coach. All right, Mike, now that's just me and you. We haven't won a national championship in anything, but we can give out our weekly awards, our Reggie Nelson Awards for Excellence in the Field of Sport and Kyle Jackson Bad Angles of the Week. One good thing, one bad thing. Let's start with our Kyles, and let's start with you.
I think I may have given this whole situation to Kyle Jackson before. I'm going to hit it again because it deserves to if it hasn't gotten it already. The whole Jeremy Fowler, Urban Meyer situation that blew up after Deontay Thompson's quote about John Brantley being a real quarterback. If you want my full thoughts on the matter and why I feel like pretty much everyone handled it poorly, you check out The Alligator today, my column's in it, including the Orlando Sentinel, who I feel bears a lot of responsibility in this matter that they've kind of shirked, and it really bothers me as a journalism student and an aspiring sports writer to see adults behaving in this manner. So that really bothers me, doesn't sit well at all. So there's my Kyle Jackson.
You can also listen to our last podcast, hear a lot of thoughts about
a lot of thoughts
from a lot of different people, including Harrison Diamond.
Yeah.
All right, I'm going to give out my Kyle Jackson to my 7:25 a.m. editing lab. That's right. I'm going to take a student complaint here. Today's my birthday. I'll say it.
I was going to wait till the very end to throw that out there.
No, this is why.
Bravo for mentioning it.
Yeah, I have to just for this, because I started off my birthday, wake up at 6 a.m., going to a 7:25 a.m. editing lab, sitting there for 2.5-3 hours, editing stories early in the morning, trying not to fall asleep, thinking, I can't wait to get out of here.
And you can't skip that class,
no,
right?
Yeah. Once a week, can't miss. I missed for the NCAA tournament when I went to Oklahoma City, and I had to do the work on the road on deadline.
You should look at it this way.
In my hotel.
Since you had to get up at 6:30, you will experience more hours of your birthday than you normally would.
I was going to say, this is the longest birthday I'll ever have, because it was like 6 to who knows what time tonight.
Midnight, probably.
Probably about 9:30. Actually, probably 2 or 3 hours after I get home when I take a nap and then wake up again. But yeah, so I'm giving my Kyle Jackson my editing lab. It's not your fault, but I'm blaming you for this editing lab. Reggie's? Mike?
Reggie Nelson goes to Tom Green, not the well-known comedian, but our gymnastics writer.
Well-known? Is he still well-known?
Yeah,
among sure. Our generation.
Yeah, sure. Tom Green, we were in the office last night. We had an AL-only fantasy baseball draft. I've never done a fantasy baseball draft. I haven't watched baseball in 2 to 3 years, at least. Tom handled the back half of my draft. Did a great job. Helped me pull in Mike Sweeney. Helped me round out my 9 Seattle Mariners on my roster. I also got Carlos Santana, who I didn't know had switched over from a musical career to baseball.
Supernatural musical career to that.
Went pretty well. I bid 34 for Sean Figgins on the Mariners, who I think was going off at 19 originally. Ben Volen from the Palm Beach Post, who we've had on this podcast before, thought Sean Figgins was Evan Longoria, so he bid 33, and I had to have him, so I hit 34. Probably the worst draft auction move of all time, but I'll take it.
Yeah, so Tom at least got you through that. Otherwise, you would have just drafted the entire Mariners.
Great job, Tom. He actually knew what he was doing. He had some people in mind who'd be good for my team.
Including Aaron Hill.
Right. Yeah, Aaron Hill. Actually, that was me. I got Aaron Hill. Oh. I still don't know who he is, but he looked good. His stats did.
That's good. All right, well, I'm going to give my Reggie wrap up the show to Florida UAA SID, Sean Cartel and Kelly Reynolds, for helping us set up this this festival in here today, getting Mike Holloway and Greg Troy on the show. Very cool. That was something I wanted to do, get two smaller sport coaches, because I think I really like these shows and listeners. I hope you guys like them as well. I think it's a different side of UF sports that you don't hear. It's not just us bickering and whining about Urban Meyer and Steve Adazio. It's a nice change of pace. It's the This American Life to our usual PTI, I like to say. So I want to do more of this. Listeners, if you like it, definitely send any feedback about it to podcast@alligator.org. Any other thoughts on the show or anything going forward, send it to that address as well. We should be back either end of this week, beginning of next week with another show, probably.
We'll surprise you.
Yeah, we'll surprise myself.
And also, make sure, give us feedback on if we're putting everything in the proper context, or if you need more explanation on these sports, since you may not be familiar with them. And also, if there are any other coaches or sports you'd like to see covered.
Billy Donovan. Can we get Billy Donovan?
Sure, I'm sure we can get Billy in here, probably Urban Meyer. We'd like to do gymnastics with Rhonda Fain, if we could do that sometime soon. That'd be cool. So let us know what you would think of that idea.
All right. And also leave us reviews on iTunes. I realized the other day that we're so critically acclaimed. I went to find the most critical review of us on iTunes. It was 4 stars and said we were entertaining and knowledgeable. That's our most critical review. It says we're entertaining and knowledgeable.
I think this is the pinnacle of our lives.
It really
is. The most critical thing someone can say of you is that you're entertaining and knowledgeable.
We have 20 reviews, 5 stars.
Wow.
We're like a great indie movie at this point.
Yeah.
Well, you know, critically loved, no popular acclaim.
Oh, man.
So we're searching for that. If you recommend us to your friends, check us out on iTunes, subscribe to us on iTunes, become a fan of us on Facebook. Your friends are going to see that in your profile, probably not think anything of it, but maybe they will, and they'll become a fan as well.
This means in 15 years our podcast is going to blow up and be hugely popular. It's going to go like...
Hopefully.
Yeah.
That's, I mean, I would hope for, you know, this year, maybe this week, maybe right now after I upload this show, but... Can't always get what you want. That's the one thing I learned on my birthday. You can't always get what you want. All right, we'll be back. Thanks for listening. End the show, Barry!